Correct Weight, brought to you by Tabs The Lock. New on the Tab app. T's and C's apply. Gamble responsibly. Gamblers Help 1-800-858-858. Let's start the Racing Rewind. After it's all done and dusted, the Correct Weight Racing Review. Here's Warren Huntley, Dean Lester and Brendan Delaney.
Delaney out and Diorio in this morning for Correct Weight in the review hour. And because we've got the presence of Carl Diorio, we'll touch on the win of St Mark's Basilica over Adabe in the UK overnight. Firstly, let's welcome in Dean Lester to the program. Good morning to you, Dino.
Yes, good morning, Warren.
Finals day at Flemington yesterday. How did you see the meeting?
Enjoyed the day. It was good competitive racing. Track played well. Yeah, a few results didn't quite go the way as probably punters would have liked, mainly Dice Roll, I suppose, but all in all, a good day's racing.
Yeah, I found out that Dice Roll wasn't the messiah yesterday, and had a good chat to Lee Jordan on course yesterday, and we'll incorporate this into the program, and happy to get yours and Carl's thoughts as we get deeper into the program. But the Flemington team are very keen to boost finals day prize money. It's not at the level that they want it for. There was a small increase, Dean, this year, but Lee's keen to get the winner champion final and perhaps one or two other races to about 250,000 and almost 200,000 across the board for the remainders to encourage participants to and connections to really target finals day at this time of year. No ballots yesterday, still reasonable field sizes, but just something that the team are going to work with Racing Victoria and the VRC, Dean, to try and boost finals day in terms of its status and its prize money. And I think that's something that would be well received and probably is something that's a bit overdue.
Yeah, I think, Warren, I'm very strong on this, that we should be aspirational to aim at things within our industry. And if finals day is the pinnacle of winter racing, there should be added incentive and added prestige to it. You know, you look at the horses that won 2 weeks ago, they won very similar prize money to the finals yesterday. So they don't feel like they've missed out on anything by winning 2 weeks ago. So no, I'm all for a big crescendo to the winter racing.
Carl Diorio's had a decent spell, but he's back for Correct Weight this morning. Good morning to you, Carl.
Yes, certainly a long freshen up. It's good to be back with you, Warren and Dean. And I echo the sentiments there. I think probably that off-peak pool of horses, they've got so much opportunity to race for excellent prize money throughout the year that, I think by boosting finals day and making it a real pinnacle of the winter period with the prize money that is consistent with a day of that status would be fantastic, and you'd see full fields and better quality.
And it wasn't an issue yesterday, but I made a point with Lee Jordan, and we'll get to the review of the feature races shortly, that you have got interstate trainers targeting these races because of the way it's structured now. The point system doesn't really or isn't there as the way it was. It's effectively if you run first or second in a heat, you're guaranteed to run in the final, and then it's up for grabs after that. I think, Dean, from my perspective, horses that have run in a heat should get preference in a ballot as opposed to horses who are just trying to pick out the race from afar.
Yeah, that's true, Warren. I don't think they're with the black type status of the Winter Championship. They can go with that system, but other than that, the other races definitely so. And yeah, that was the main thing about it. And I think you'd like to see that because then the form evolves. And yesterday, it was good to see Royal Zell win, again, another stakes race, so probably couldn't apply to that one. But I didn't mind a little bit of that because the numbers were down, but you wouldn't want to see them take a place of a horse that had been right through a series.
Certainly the team at Flemington are thinking about it, and they would have liked better participation yesterday, and we've already got an SMS from Ariba that I'll get to shortly talking about that. The final was taken out by Mongolian Marshall.
Galaxy Raider, 350 metres to go. They quicken. It's Dice Roll, a half length biometric. Kerwin's Lane's persisting for a run up on the inside. The favourite's got company. Furion out wider and Mongolian Marshall stretched across the track. Dice Roll, biometric, Furion, Mongolian Marshall, four across the track. The favourite's gone. Mongolian Marshall sprints up at the 100, takes the lead from Furion. Mongolian Marshall in an upset. Beat Furion, photo third. Dice Roll, kickback, biometric or Adelaide Ace. And then...
Well, he was a Ramaruffi a while ago. He was $41 yesterday. Dino, how did this work out?
Yes, I did receive some correspondence. Why didn't I have him in? Because he was good to us a few weeks ago. Well, you can't sort of operate like that, but he was terrific. Brett Prebble's really got the key to him, and we all saw that he balked a bit when he got to the front a few weeks back. Well, there was none of that yesterday. He had him under full control, got the momentum up at the right time, and he did a good job to win. I think what Stuart Gow said to you earlier, Warren's really valid, is that whilst he's got good form at up to 2,000 metres and maybe even a little bit beyond, he's a really strong miler, and the tempo of the race in most cases usually suits. Yesterday, they went out just under 1.5 for the first 1,000, so very, very pedestrian. But that didn't disadvantage the backmarkers because they got their momentum up, and maybe Dice Roll, who went to a foreign roll in essence in leading, might have been better rolling along at a bit stronger speed, because right on the line he was actually kicking back a little bit, Dice Roll.
I suppose when you looked at the race on paper prior to the running of it, Carl, the tempo did look to be an issue, and I thought Odeon had probably lead, perhaps with Dice Roll sitting outside him. How did you see the race?
Well, certainly you can understand why Fred Kersley took up the running with Dice Roll. The horse began so well, and the lead was up to grabs, and you certainly don't want to be posted. And even though he was going quite slowly at halfway, if he was the horse that we thought he was, we still felt that he would probably win from that position. I suppose after the race, we look at retrospect, and maybe if we had another chance to ride the race, maybe Fred would have gone a little bit quicker, because it did appear he was out sprinted in that final 600 metres when they broke 12 seconds for those final three furlongs. So, look, the performance was adequate by Dice Roll, but certainly I think would be better suited just ridden off the pace, but circumstances didn't allow.
Dean, when we look at Dice Roll's runs here in Australia, he's just got stronger and stronger. He hasn't necessarily picked up and showed a burst of acceleration, but he's won races more by his strength than his acceleration. Is that a fair comment?
So, and the deeper he got into the race, the better he's got. So I think yesterday he didn't roll into the race, and actually the others did. And you can usually tell if a horse has used their full energy or not if they're just holding ground on the line. He was actually starting to kick back on the line, which makes me think there was still a bit more to give. Maybe he needed to crank it up at the right time. Or, as you said, I think probably they would have had loose plans of what was going to happen because it looked tactical. But I was surprised that Odeon went as far back as he actually did early, even though he wasn't that far off the pace, but it was a little bit foreign.
And Stuart Gow talking about some potential targets for Mongolian Marshall. He's deep into the campaign, Dean, but I suppose he's not showing any signs of stopping yet, and he's got a template of how to manage him between runs. Where could he fit in?
I don't know about spring aspirations, but whether he's the really good country cup sort of horse, that sort of level. I don't think the feature miles are where he's at, but certainly a good level of country cup, and with say a race like the Cranbourne Cup now being at $500,000 at the back end of spring, maybe even something like that might be something that appeals to him, because it is 1600 now.
A horse you've got an involvement in the management of, Furion, who was only second up from a decent spell yesterday. What did you make of his run?
Yeah, he was terrific. He was positive out of the gates. It would have been at Flemington last start too, but he got just sort of inconvenienced at the start. But yesterday he rolled forward. He toughed it out well. It was a bunch finish, and that's often that's the product of a slow tempo, because everything's got plenty to give. But I thought it was a good run. I thought Biometric had a beautiful run into the race and ran well, and Adelaide Ace ran well, as he has been in recent starts. He was ridden off the speed, so I thought it was a bit of a curious find that Lindsay Smith incurred there for a change in tactics. He's been off pace in recent runs, and just he just filtered back from a wide draw.
It's bizarre, fine $400. Lindsay Smith, the stewards were the opinion that the stable had breached the rule by not notifying of a change in riding instructions, which led to the horse being ridden today in a manner different compared to its most recent start. Well, one recent start isn't necessarily an identification of a horse's pattern, Dean, is it?
In most of his recent runs, he'd been ridden off speed, yeah. Warren. So, he only had to go back two runs to Caulfield, where he's near the back of the field. So, I thought it was a bit of a curiosity in yesterday's stewards report.
Yeah, absolutely. And reading from the stewards' report regarding Dice Roll, Fred Gursley reported that it had been not his intention to lead. However, when caught wide, he elected to allow the gelding to stride. I think no doubt was the right decision. He added that the gelding did not appreciate racing so far forward and, in his opinion, would be better ridden with cover. Nothing from a post-race veterinary examination, and that doesn't surprise you, Dean, because he worked strongly through the line. He just wasn't able to quicken when the others could.
Yeah, exactly right, Warren. So, yeah, look, I mean, he's still, I think, a really, interesting horse for the future. And the day he gets in a really, truly run race, we saw that at his first Australian start over 1,400 at Caulfield. He got in a truly run race and we saw him really strong through the line. And I think the better the company he runs in, actually the better he'll go, Dice Roll.
Carl, anything else from the race that you'd like to identify?
Yeah, I think Furion's ready for 2,000 metres and will be awfully hard to beat under those circumstances next time out. The other factor, I suppose, biometric. In my mind, I know he's a feature race winner overseas over the mile, but I feel probably 1,400 is his most effective distance. And given that sit sprint tempo, racing outside Dice Roll, he probably profited by the way the race was run. And I suppose, just over three lengths from first to last with a 1.5 kilo weight spread top to bottom. I suppose it was the form out of this race could be fairly mixed going forward.
Just the reference to the SMS from Hariba, I'll just clarify what Hariba said so that we get to understand his perspective. Morning, Warren. Always try to be positive, but yesterday's Flemington meeting highlighted the lack of depth, particularly in open grade. The Leilani final was contested by mares with mostly a couple of wins. Lindout, up until yesterday, had only won a maiden. The winner championship final was very low in quality. Not enough horses climbing to a decent rating. This is due to so many good horses being retired to stud or sold to Hong Kong. The result of this, we are left with a mediocre bunch of horses having very few with any real class. It's disappointing. From Hariba. Dino, before we move on to the first race on the card, you got to comment on Hariba's SMS.
Well, I think it's a very valid SMS for a start, and the retirement of horses and things is one aspect. I think the rating system has had a lot to do with it. Yes, it keeps horses in the pool for longer, as in that they don't race through grades. In the past, when it was classes 1 to 6, you often got a horse to class 3, and you knew that couldn't go on, so they'd be moved on interstate maybe. Now they're only a couple of runs from dropping a grade and winning again, so a lot of horses just gravitate in that middle bunch, so you don't get that, again, the word I'm using, aspirational. You don't go to higher grades because they can pay their way in lower grades and not have to be strive to go higher. So I think there's a combination of a few things, and maybe yesterday reflected all of that.
Just one via the SMS. I think we've covered it in our conversation of the race. But just in summary, Dino, what happened to Dice Roll? How would you try and summarise it into a couple of sentences?
I would say structure of the race was against him. I don't think, if you took the price out of it, I don't think he was essentially disappointing. And I think Carl's point's really valid, and Carl knows the international form better than anyone, that maybe he's just a really strong 1,400 metre galloper at this stage and run a mile in good company because they'll go hard.
One for Carl's international expertise. We'll get to that later on when we talk about the Coral Eclipse that was run overnight. Jagar kicked off the day for the Allerton Zara camp with Damien Lane aboard down the straight over 1,200 metres.
500 to go. It's Power Crunch, the leader, out by 5 lengths to Wolf Rain and Jagar. Manea the inside, then I Am War stalking Mischievy. It's Regulus up the middle, and then came Cardinal Gem, a gap to Eamon's Memory as they reach the 300. Power Crunch getting weary now, and they're coming. Jagar is the first to strike. Regulus down the middle of the track, and then Cardinal Gem and stalking. It's Jagar at the 100 metres. Regulus, and on the inside, stalking. Still Jagar from Regulus and stalking. Jagar punched out. Jagar won the first, followed by stalking, Regulus and Mischievy. It's fourth from Cardinal.
Thoughts on the first, Carl?
Yeah, I thought this was actually quite a good race. They seemed to run along from the get-go. The first 600 off the standing start was 35.61, and they closed in 36.1 the final 600. Obviously, Power Crunch got out and rolled along, and Jagar did the dirty work, chased up the tearaway leader, and was strong at the finish, holding off all her rivals at bay. Her pedigree suggests that 1,400 metres will be no problem. Her mother, Spirit Dance, won the Angus Armanasco, was a three-year-old filly, and she's the younger half-sister to Palmy, who won two late-season two-year-old races in the course we saw in the Leilani series final later in the day. So I think the key to Jagar is we're probably going to see the best of her over slightly further and maybe might go in that. So I think the Bovis Gold Ingot's just around the corner and that might be a suitable race for this homebred galloper.
Dino, the steward's report regarding the favourite Manea. Mark Zara reported the colt failed to respond to his riding, may have come to the end of a preparation. There was nothing from a veterinary examination post-race. Your thoughts?
Well, Manea was, I thought after about 300 metres was going to be an interesting challenge because Manea ran in a race at Donald where they went an even speed early and backed right off. And as the speed went off, Linda Meach just kept improving into the race. Well, yesterday, power crunch, blinkers first time. We don't see it very often down the straight. He virtually bolted. That was a really fast first 600 given the conditions. And so a lot of these horses had never experienced that sort of pressure before. And the one that came through was Jagar, Stalking, who I think probably looking for a little bit further, handled it well. And the first starters, Regulus, ran very well. Miss Cheviots, who came off a fast 9.75 at Swan Hill, handled the pressure quite well. And the one that came off the lower pressure, like Manea, back to the inside too, where looked as though he just got a bit crowded at the 300 and that might have been enough to tip him over the edge. So it was a totally different structure to what we see down the straight, usually where they jump, they settle pretty steady and huddle and then just sprint home. We don't see it very often anymore, and it was actually showed, made a bit of a test, hence we got really significant margins too.
One from Craig from Keelaw, a regular contributor via the SMS. Thanks for your contribution, Craig. And Dean, back to the first, we probably didn't focus on it enough, but Friday at Geelong and yesterday, Brett Prebble reminding us how good he is as a jock starting to form a partnership with the Lindsay Smith stable. That was from Geelong on Friday and yesterday for the Stuart Gower stable. But we forget about Brett Prebble a little bit. He spent a lot of time over in Hong Kong, Dean, but that is the record that Jamie Carr's about to break, is Brett Prebble's record. So we underlining what a great jockey he's been for such an extended period of time.
Yes, well, you know, you think of, Roy Higgins' record was passed on to Michael Clark and then, or the Gouch, and then on to Michael Clark and then Brett Prebble. But Brett's held it for over 20 years and there was only maybe a dozen night meetings back then. There's a lot more city meetings to aspire to now. And Brett's held that record for so long. And, he gave us a really good reminder. Firstly, on Friday, he set the trend on Friday. He went out before anyone else on the track at Geelong down the centre. And then yesterday, getting home in the feature race on Mongolia Marshall.
One of the most popular jockeys in the country is Harry Coffey. He was aboard Cena's Express in race two in the Silver Bowl final yesterday.
Viable Dude, Vibrant Glider, Baglioni under the whip, then Merle the Pearl, Seb Song and points all round, Bengal Bandit, 300 metres to go, Reliable Dude is chasing hard, followed by Rath Lynn, and Seb Song's unleashing down the middle of the track, 200 to go, Reliable Dude in front, Signers Express is getting through, and Seb Song, Signers Express burst through, Seb Song coming at it, Signers Express extends three quarters, Seb Song, Signers Express beats Seb Song, Reliable Dude third, for fourth, Bengal Bandit.
Talking to Connections when it was running first up, this preparation, Dino, I'm sure they asked Adam Cretton and myself to call it Cena's Express. I should have passed that on to Matty Hill yesterday, but what did you make of his performance?
I thought he'd do that at Sandown a couple of weeks ago, and unfortunately, of course, he had the heart arrhythmia and he dropped out and ran poorly. But yesterday, given a great steer by Harry Coffey, just weaving through the field and was in amongst all the good chances, so he probably was well aware from a fair way out that the race was going to open up a bit for him, and it opened up beautifully for him, and he was able to win. Seb Song ran well. He's an honest horse. The soft ground suits him. Reliable Dude. There wasn't much between them when you consider how Seb Song ran at Cranbourne. The bigger track probably suited him yesterday. Reliable Dude, a long way into a preparation and ran well, and Bengal Bandit rolled along at an even speed and ramped it up from a fair way out, gave a good sight and just peaked on his run late. Certainly the first three had a bit of a margin over the rest. Vibrant Glider, just fair. Rathlin doesn't run a mile, needs dry ground and struggling to win a race. But I think all honours with the ride and the winner. I think he's a pretty handy horse in the restricted grades, but going well.
Couple of teasers for Jamie Carr in the first couple with Regulus and Seb Song looming at different stages. Carl, what were your thoughts on the second?
Yeah, I thought the ride made the difference with the winner, Sinners Express. Just a great ride by Harry Coffey. Seb Song's honest, as Dean said. And I think you could probably put Baglioni in the category with Rathlin. That's maybe the 1,600 metres isn't the best distance for that horse as well. And Reliable Dude, that was the performance of the race, I thought. Just covered extra ground, and they did go with a quicker speed than any of the 1,600-metre races on the day, albeit not ballistic, but still reasonably run. And I just thought the way he travelled so boldly into the race and fought on so well, I think he's going to make a lovely horse next season, and Connections are going to have plenty of fun with him.
Stewart's report indicating visualising who hung inward when under pressure in the straight, pulled up with a degree of lameness in the left foreleg, requires a veterinary clearance prior to racing again. So perhaps a forgive for visualising out of race two. We get to race three. Jamie Carr was aboard the easing favourite, Grand Promenade.
And Promenade given its head at the 400 metres, slid away from them. Three or four lengths in front of Master Chum getting out to second. Then Tolmax, Smoke and Piero and Royal Crown down the middle from Pissarro. But Grand Promenade extends its lead to five lengths at the 200 metres. Make that six lengths from Royal Crown, Smoke and Piero, Tolmax. But it's all Grand Promenade. Jamie Carr is going to give it an easy time. It's going to trot in. Grand Promenade did it easily. 2.5 lengths, Royal Crown, Smoke and Piero, and then
first of a double for Jamie. Your thoughts on this race, Carl?
I don't know if he's beating much, but he's beating him well, and well, better than well, put it that way. And he certainly deserves those lofty spring aspirations that Connections have in mind for him. Of course, we know Kieran Maher and David Eustace, they are able to plot these stays really well. They don't tend to stall them for long periods of time, And the Bart Cummings long-term looks a suitable target, I'd imagine. He can always drop down from a level thereafter. But the way the race was run, he just travelled so well in the lead. He got it tested at some stages by Hackey, but he's just dominant. And he's really not just a class above, he's several classes above these horses at this stage of his career.
Dean, another horse you're involved in the management of. He looks to be an exciting staying prospect. What's the team think of him?
Yeah, well, he's been a long-term project to get to, you know, this stage of his life, and you know, for things to have gone right so far has been a, you know, real plus. He sets up now to have a go at the spring at the right age, yeah, you know, with the right rating, with the right, you know, amount of racing under his belt. So it doesn't often happen with horses, Warren, as you know. So everything has gone well. I hope the next few months do, because I'd love to see him get a chance to at least prove if he's good enough. I suspect he might be, and I think Dave Eustace's point's really valid. He'll go better in a stronger run race. He's only ever been in a really high-pressure race on one occasion. It was only a restricted race at Ballarat, and I think that's as good as he ever went. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him in a race of good pressure. And no, he's much better than this grade. How much better, we'll find out in time.
Sounds like the Bart Cummings is the way to try and ensure he gets a start in the Melbourne Cup. But there's a race at Flemington in a couple of weeks' time over 2,800 Dino, and some publications have it worth 130,000. This year it's worth 150. Lee Jordan indicating he'd like to boost at the Flemington Cup. You're involved in the evolution of this race. How can that race, or could that race, fit into his program, and what sort of horses would target that race?
I think the Mar Eustace team will probably run, I'd imagine, South Pacific in that race. They've been alternating these stayers, sort of running them every 4 weeks. And I think Grand Promenade won't be there. He'll be having just a little bit of a freshen up. I haven't spoken to the team yet, but looking at the calendar, there's, you know, a couple of races through early and mid September, and then to the Bart Cummings in early October. So he doesn't need a lot of racing, and he won't need a lot of time off. And with the remarkable facilities that the Mar Eustace stable have to move horses around and keep their mind fresh and their bodies well, he'll stay in work but won't race for a few weeks.
He dominated this race. Is there anything we can take out from the performances behind?
Look, I think that at this stage, you know, Royal Crown and their off-season, they might go to the Flemington Cup in a couple of weeks. Smoke and Piero's become a bit of a constant, and every time he, you know, turns up and earns another 13,500 for Connections running thirds in these races, he's doing very well. I would think that they'll head on to a race like that. We did highlight yesterday the gear change of Master Chum to the bar plates, and I think he ran below his true ability. So maybe that gear change showed that, you know, it probably wasn't quite at his best yesterday.
The Connections of Realm of Flowers would be watching the subsequent performances of Grand Promenade and be very happy, Dean, with the fact that they've secured a spot in the Melbourne Cup through the Andrew Ramsden.
Yeah, well, exactly right. And, you know, there's a lot of little shoots of the Realm of Flowers form lines that have been stacking up well. So, you know, I think they're in the cup and they can sit back and plan a really good spring.
Shoots and Flowers working beautifully, Dino, on a Sunday morning. Carl, have you got a comment on what this race might mean for either Grand Promenade or Realm of Flowers, who was able to have the better of him in the Andrew Ramsden?
Well, I suppose with Grand Promenade, as we've touched on, you can run in the Bart Cummings, see where you measure up, and then you can drop down that level, maybe tackle one of those really good country cups, Ballarat, or even the Sandown Classic later in the year. So there's so many great staying options for a horse of his profile. And I think Realm of Flowers, prior to Incentivizers Heroics recently up in Queensland, was the pre-post Melbourne Cup favourite in some markets. So it just goes to show that this is probably one of the better domestic form lines going around.
Earl could be a budding star. He was down here for the Gary Portelli stable with Ben Mellum aboard in the Taj Rossi Series final out to 1,600 metres.
Is running on, and Royal Zell now is getting out too as they reach the 300. Forbidden City joined by Cardigan Queen, then What a Fox and Royal Zell down the middle of the track. Cardigan Queen at the 250 moves up to Forbidden City, but Royal Zell joins them both, then Celtic Glory late, but Royal Zell is coming clear and puts them to the sword. Royal Zell is going to win easily, scored well from What a Fox, photo third, Celtic Glory, or Actor Garley.
Ben Mellum aboard, looked to run nicely through the line there. Dean, how did you see the Taj Rossi final?
That's his greatest asset, Warren. I think he's a pretty smart horse to start with, but you look at his figures in Sydney, and he's always, you know, five or six lengths stronger at the end of a race than nearly any other horse, and hence that's been wins, and again yesterday. And once he peeled into the centre of the track, he had a good first two-thirds of the race peeled out, and he was really strong late, and 2 years in a row now, it's been a good race for the top weights. It doesn't matter about the weights, they're just better than them if they're winning, and Cherry Tortoni did it last year, and Royal Zell did it this year, and what's to say he won't measure up to something through the spring, you know, whether it's the absolute elite of a Group 1, yeah, but he might be around the mark in a stud stakes down here, or maybe a spring champion in Sydney, but he's a very progressive horse, and I think he's a really genuine horse too. That's the great asset he's got.
Number of these out to 1,600 for the first time. Carl, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, the winner, as he showed that lovely turn of foot at Rose Hill two starts ago, he quickened up really well when the gaps emerged and won in very good style. I think it's important to note that the first four over the line all settled on the fence with that rail trail, and I think maybe some horses won off the fence back in the field were impacted by Celestial Fury not really travelling particularly well. Forbidden City, I thought, did a nice job up on the speed, but I think certainly the run of Actor Garley, as Matty Hill in his call outlined, was an eye-catcher from back in the field. And so was Bon Vivant. I know we were just mentioning Cherry Tortone. The horse he beat in that race, this race last year, was Elfion. And Elfion looks like he then went 2 weeks later and he won the Byley Handicap. And I look at Bon Vivant's run, and I just think he's the sort of horse that can easily come out in that Byley Handicap over the 1,800 metres and turn the tables. But I think there's a lot of good form out of this race. I think Cardigan Queen's a nice filly that potentially will target the Vobis Riches next season. And then there's several nice two-year-olds to come out of this race. I think it was a stronger Taj Rossi that compared to previous years.
Out of this race, Dean, I want your comments on Actor Garley from the Rob Hickmott stable. What did you make of that run?
Yeah, well, his win at Bendigo actually speed-wise rated very well. It was, and he backed it up yesterday, and gee, you think if he goes to the Byley in a couple of weeks at 1,800, it'd be pretty hard to beat. He's had that two runs at the mile. I thought he ran well. And what was the other one, Warren? Sorry?
No, that was Actor Garley. But I suppose similar to in a similar style, a relatively lightly raced horse who looks a trip, Bon Vivant, Dean.
Yeah, I think, look, I would be thinking he'd go there as well. As Carl mentioned, with Elcione going on to that race last year, the Byley, I think he could probably go that path as well.
Dominant win from Royal Zell for the Gary Portelli stable in the Taj Rossi final over 1,600 metres. Foxy Frieda had to do some ducking and weaving with Daniel Moore aboard at her previous start. Billy Egan had the honours with Daniel Moore on the sidelines yesterday.
Around the corner, 500 to go. Star of Yuma held together by a length. Countess Tessa Aidensfield with the box seat looks for an out now. Comica 3 wide. Sensationalization runs up behind the leading wave. We Go Bam and So Far Away down the middle. Foxy Frida runs up behind them from Divine Diosa. And then Double Chance. It's Comica joined by Aidensfield. Foxy Frida's driving through and Divine Diosa down the middle. Aidensfield grabbed by Foxy Frida and Divine Diosa. Divine Diosa just in front and Foxy Frida stride for stride. Divine Diosa, Foxy Frida ahead, Bobber. Foxy Frida, I think, has just beaten Divine Diosa. Aidensfield or Comica for third.
How did you see this, Carl?
Well, Divine Diosa and Foxy Frida, both last start winners in heats of the series, rising 4 kilos into the final. But just showing again that, I suppose, winning form is good form, and you can't knock either of how these two fillies have performed in this race. I thought the performance of Aidensfield was decent, just raced a touch keen in behind them and getting out to 1,400 metres, which I think is probably her best distance, just maybe diluted her finish a little bit with the 60 kilos. The Star of Uma certainly rolled along, and Aidensfield's effort, and also Comica, I suppose, to be up near the pace, I thought had plenty of merit. Comica does look a filly that doesn't really have an acceleration, a turn of foot, a filly that has a high cruising speed. So under those circumstances of yesterday's race, perhaps wasn't as disadvantaged, but maybe Comica in future is the sort of filly that would love to be a leader and control the tempo herself.
You see it, Dane?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a fan of Foxy Frida. I like her turn of foot. She overcame difficulties by using that turn of foot to win two starts back, and again yesterday when Billy Egan needed her to quicken down sharply, she did, and beat Divine Diosa on the backup, running really well. She is a soft tracker. I think that's pretty much established, but whilst the tracks are soft, she's right in the game. Aidensfield did just enough again. Comica, I agree with Carl. I think she ran well, and probably, you know, rolling along, getting her own way might be her go. And I was quite keen on Double Chance. She's still probably a bit immature. Warren looking at her in the yard, and I think you know, this preparation under her belt, and next time in, she'll be up to this, you know, up to winning a race like this.
I agree. I think, and when the pressure went on, the race got away from her a little bit, but then she balanced up, and I thought the last little bit of the race was solid enough, Dean, but just she didn't seem to have the skills to actually quicken when she needed to. I love the way that Foxy Frida stuck her neck out when challenged by Divine Diosa. I thought that was an outstanding ride, probably one of the better losing rides of the day for Damien Lane. But it Double Chance, Dino, she just seemed to take a while to be able to then build her momentum, but you couldn't be disappointed with the last little bit of her race.
No, maybe, you know, with the couple of runs at 1,400 under her belt now, she is actually looking for a mile as well. Where, I think she's got a future, and this was a pretty solidly run race.
Foxy Frida showing that good burst of acceleration again, and then holding off the late challenge from Divine Diosa in the final for the Rivette Series. Go to the final, the winner championships, Mongolian Marshall with Brett Preble aboard for Stuart Gow. What a strong win that was. Jamie Carr was getting close to the 100. She'd had one winner earlier on in the day. She was on the heavily backed Token Spirit in race 7.
Next in the field is Ruba back along the inside. Token Spirit presents up the middle now and unleashes as they reach the 300 metres. Ruba grabbed by Token Spirit. Unique Artist is gone. Then Literati and Mr. Pocket, and further back in the field then Cakewalk Baby. But Token Spirit, 150 metres to go, went for home. Three lengths in front of Ruba, Literati, Cakewalk Baby. But it's over. Token Spirit comes clear. A terrific staying performance to win it by three lengths. Token Spirit won it. Photo second, Cakewalk Baby or Ruba, and then
Oh, heavily back, Dino. What did you make of this race?
Yeah, I doubt I could get this race more wrong, Warren. I thought Token Spirit would drift, and I thought off that 2,400-metre race, which was really only a 600-metre sprint, I wondered if a few of these might have better staying prowess. Well, he was the one just powering away at the end. So, all honours to the stable there with the Griffiths de Kock team getting it right with Token Spirit and him winning the final and winning it easily. Cakewalk Baby loves the soft ground, ran well. Ruba just a constant in these races, as is Literati. They've been going round in them and they battle on well. And Eco Warrior ran fifth, finished a lot closer to Token Spirit in the lower pressure race at Sandown, but Token Spirit powered away yesterday.
Jamie Carr copping a shoe in the race at some stage there, Carl, but was able to take her ride in the last. Your thoughts on the win of Token Spirit in the Mahogany final?
Yeah, just another side note to an incredible story. Yeah, just more drama. It's been a few of us journos scrambling around the course to see if she was okay. But a lovely ride and a lovely performance by Token Spirit. I must concede, deep into the campaign, I didn't envisage that sort of dominant victory. And as Matthew de Kock suggested after the race, they might press on and have one more run, given that he's Vobis qualified and earns, I think, the best part of $100,000, just a little bit over, for winning that race, including with the bonuses. So it's wonderful prize money to be up and about this time of year. Cakewalk Baby, decent effort. Certainly one of the better performed progeny by Glass Harmonium, who doesn't have that many on the ground. I thought that performance from back in the field had merit. And I suppose there were a couple of notable performances, just not really living up to market expectation. Unique Artist pulled up with a laceration to the near hind cannon. I'm seeing the stewards report. And also Don Arcangelo pulled up with a throat abnormality. So those two very disappointing performances can be explained in the stewards report.
Now, Carl, you wear a few hats. You're actually the editorial head for racing.com out at Flemington yesterday. Jamie Carr's now sitting on 99 wins with two races to go. How intense is the media scrum, I suppose you'd say, with all the guys out there from the Herald Sun, various digital platforms, etc., with Jamie Carr heading towards that 100? How do you plan for what might be ahead?
Well, it's tricky because certainly I'm lucky that I'm not in the print business, because the print business has deadlines and they have to file stories by, you know, maybe 6 or 7 o'clock. And when you have Jamie potentially riding the winner in the last race, it just turns everything on its head. Certainly the narrative of the day, with Brett Prebble winning the feature race, the winner championship on the day that was meant to be a coronation, well, 90 minutes later, it knocks that story off. So it certainly throws the spanner in the works. And if Jamie is to break the record, let's hope it's in race one and not race nine, so we can give it the ample coverage it deserves.
Well, Dino, I suppose what this might mean is a lot of focus is now going to go on the meeting at Sandown Hillside on Wednesday, where, just looking ahead, Jamie Carr's got rides on Right the Score, who was very good winning at her most recent start. Another one for the Price and Kent Junior Stable in Scientific. She's also aboard National Choice for that team, and Heaven's Gift for Tony McAvoy, just in some early acceptances. So a good chance she's going to bring up the record at Sandown, probably from an atmosphere point of view. It might have been better if it was a Saturday at Flemington, but you'd think, Dino, likely to happen now, Sandown at a midweek meeting on a Wednesday.
Yeah, it certainly looks that way, Warren, and with all the media attention there and all the different sources from probably television and the print, I have the press rooms all powered up for to cover it, because it won't have had as much at Sandown for such a long time. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing the 100 wins come up Wednesday.
Getting her one step closer aboard Token Spirit in race 7 at Flemington yesterday. The second last down the straight, Astrologist. He loves it there.
The Astrologist bowling out a length, Elberman, then Banquo back on the inside, William Thomas further back, Isurian about to show its hand from Luana Magic, Irish Songs, Romancer and Rock Prophet held up. The Astrologist at the clock tower with Banquo now, who lets down William Thomas up on the inside. The Astrologist and Banquo at the 100 stride for stride, then Luana Magic. The Astrologist fights just from Banquo, and the Astrologist won again. Second Banquo, third William Thomas, and then for fourth Isurian, all Luana Magic, then Irish Song.
Carl, your thoughts on this race?
Well, I think it's the contrast of two. You've got the winner, the Astrologist, who's absolutely getting every bit out of his ability, quite an honest sprinter, doesn't really know how to run a bad race, loves the Flemington straight, rolls his sleeves up, gives his all up in the pace, and it's hard to really knock a horse like that. And I suppose, in contrast, Banquo, a four-year-old Entire, he just gives the impression, if he was a footy player, you'd just love to give him that stern half-time team talk to lift, because he gives the impression that he's better than his 96 rating shows, and that was his day yesterday. I certainly thought so. His second-up record is best. The way the race panned out, he travelled up sweetly. You know, Damien Lane was swinging off him at the 400, but He just doesn't know how to apply himself at the bottom ends of his races, and that, I think, showed over the final 200 metres.
Lighthearted yesterday, but I think you used the term socialiser in previewing this race for Banquo. How did you see yesterday's performance?
Yeah, well, at the 200, if you're on the astrologist, the main danger was Banquo, and you're probably still on pretty good terms with yourself, but he's a real fighter, the astrologist, and what he has got now is just a terrific body of work down the straight. His form anywhere is good and competitive, but he's got that a very good third hitter early in his career, the second on Melbourne Cup Day, and now these two wins. So he's very comfortable down the straight. Look, we don't know the behind the scenes with Banquo. He might have issues, but he looms up like he's going to win a lot, and the last 200 of his race is never really his best. So, look, he's run another good race without saluting. William Thomas ran well. He was down to the inside, which I thought might have been a disadvantage going into the meeting, but we saw after the first race that they were going to go to the inside, so he's run well. Luana Magic was so far out of the handicap, ran a terrific race. I don't know what benefit it gets from that, and hopefully it doesn't lose, get any penalty points for running fourth. And Isaurian, he ran well. Probably his fresh form suggests he's better at 1,100, and maybe the 1,200 was a little bit far for him. And Irish Songs totally bombed the start, but given the tempo of the race, was able to catch up. And there wasn't much between them at the end of the race, but the astrologist, he's an absolute beauty for these sort of races, and maybe a little bit, but you think the Ori Star might be the next challenge for him down the straight.
Discuss the track or the conditions yet. Dean Yendall, who was aboard High Stranger in this race, said he wasn't that disappointed with the performance because he found it difficult to make ground when wide on the track. Nothing from a post-race veteran examination from High Stranger. Dino, how did you see the track playing overall?
It played fine because the fields weren't big, and that inside patch was where you wanted to be. There wasn't necessarily a lane, but you didn't need to get out wider or anything like that. So, we saw in both straight races them gravitate to the inside, and the winners were spread, evenly across the track that they used. But you wouldn't have wanted the fields to be much bigger and them get out any wider.
Your thoughts on the way the track played, Carl?
Yeah, I didn't perceive any apparent bias. Just, I suppose, there weren't too many leaders on the day that won, but that might be just race shape sort of related to, rather than a track pattern or a bias. So I had no issues with the track. It certainly wasn't the reason for my losing down the punt.
And monitor the wind conditions, as we do, Dean, with the Flemington VRC app, which gives you your live updates on the way the wind's playing. How did you see that in terms of it potentially being a factor yesterday?
Yeah, well, it actually came up a bit stronger, Warren, than that was predicted. And, you're involved there. I wondered if that was the impact maybe on the leaders, if anything was on the day, but certainly not the surface.
Might have made a little bit of impact to horses at potentially leading around the circle and just into a bit of a breeze there. But yeah, overall, I agree. I think the track played quite well. And from another race, Dino, just a quick one via the SMS. How do you compare Token Spirit to Grand Promenade from John? Your assessments in trying to compare those two horses, just how do you compare them?
Token Spirit was good yesterday in that restricted grade three-year-old, coming up, and maybe in 12 months' time he'll develop into something like that. But, I think Grand Promenade's just got that good, relentless staying sort of profile about him. And, I think he's a fairly superior horse at this stage.
Anticipation was building towards the last with Jamie Carr aboard Barbie's Fox trying to notch up the 100, the last race at Flemington. But Lindout and Craig Newitt had something to say.
Lindout, Galgani went for home at the 300 metres, took off three lengths in front. Barbie's Fox is chasing, followed by Chassis and Lindout. Galgani at the 200 getting weary. Barbie's Fox and Lindout is exploding down the outside in the shadows. Lindout moves up, takes the lead. Cracking win. Lindout won it by two lengths. Explosive stuff from Galgani. Photo third, Chassis or Barbie's Fox, then don't tell the boss.
Great chat with EJ before. Carl, just learning a bit of a backstory of Lindout. It's been a journey for connections, but looks like they're being rewarded now.
That's right, and typical of Enver's placement. He just positions these horses to advantage all the time. I know Lindout was out of the handicap, if you look at the ratings, but certainly wasn't out of place in that field. And she's got a wonderful turn of foot. The application of blinkers that occurred early last month has certainly stimulated improvement. And the way she finished off behind Don't Tell the Boss, well, it shouldn't have come as any surprise the way she won yesterday, and it certainly didn't. She was well supported in betting and justified that market support. And I think that this probably won't be the end of her winning run. She's lightly raced. I'm sure she can sort of continue to lift their rating, particularly this time of year, or even in better sections of the year at Flemington. She looks quite an exciting prospect.
For mares, Dino, the future value as broodmares enhance if they can add black type to their pedigree. She's lightly raced and only her second win yesterday, but is there the opportunity to aim up at something like that for any of the horses here?
Oh, I think the winner's really smart, and I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if EJ wanted to just back off her a little bit and name it, you know, even giving her a little flyer to race like the Let's Elope with a lot of fitness on her side, she could run a really cheeky race, I think. But good result for the Cranbourne trainers here. First five across the line, all Cranbourne trained, and Lindhout was really good. I think Craig Newitt's post-race interview was, you know, really valid, that he probably learned a lot about her off one ride that she quickened so well last start. He might have got there a bit early, and yesterday he was able to really time it to a nicety. In saying that, he had a really good bunny to chase in Galgani, who led at a good speed and then really quickened it up from a fair way out. So she was left out a long way in front from a fair way out, and to her credit, stuck to her task well. I think Chassis in a truly run race at 1400 proved that that's probably where her future lies now. She was always a bit hard going and a bit aggressive, and John Price has taken the time to really get her to race well, and they're bearing the fruits of that labour now by running a placing at 1400 here and winning at 1300 three starts back. And Barbie's Fox loomed up, ran pretty well, but she did have a really tough run first up, and whether that just took a little bit out of her yesterday. And Don't Tell the Boss was the one that was poorly off at the weights yesterday, and that probably told as well.
Good race the last, and a strong performance, well supported. Lindout taking it out for EJ and Craig Newitt. Another one via the SMS, Peter from Montrose. We have discussed this, Peter, but if you've just chimed in, I'll read Peter's SMS. Morning, team. Finals day had a real aura about it, but now seems to be another meeting due to horses not having to qualify for the day. Your thoughts? Well, Peter, we did discuss, or I did discuss, that situation with Lee Jordan from the VRC yesterday, and they are looking at tweaking some of the conditions and horses that have run in heats getting some exemption to the horses that aren't black type in terms of being able to gain a start, and also boosting the prize money to try and entice horses to continue through the series. So it has been identified by the people at the VRC, Peter, and they are looking at a way to try and bolster it. I think in some way that just the field sizes yesterday and the fact that there weren't any ballots, etc., was probably some concern for them, given that, you know, it is finals day and the highlight for the winter racing, and they're looking at trying to bolster that and make it more attractive to try and compete and trying to get better quality horses with increased prize money rather than just bulking the fields out. So it is an issue that is being looked at by the VRC and Racing Victoria. Peter, thank you for your SMS. It's 10 to 10 on RSN 927. We'll have a look back internationally after this break.
Basilica going clear now by three widening lengths. Misriff and Adame have been simply turned away. It's going to be four straight Group 1s for St Mark's Basilica, and a record-equalling win for Aidan O'Brien, his fifth in the Coral Eclipse. It was the brilliant three-year-old St Mark's Basilica who won the Coral Eclipse.
And we're on a day of fighting back to get second there, Carl. You're our international expert, a race won by, so you think, one of the record wins for Aidan O'Brien in this race. What did you make of last night's running?
Well, it was a small field. There was only a field of four, but there was three high-quality horses in the field with St Mark's Basilica, Adabe and Mishriff. And the Eclipse is historically the clash of the generations. It provides the first opportunity for the three-year-olds of that particular season to meet the open-age horses. And St Mark's Basilica has arguably been one of the better three-year-olds this season. He'd won the French Guineas and the French Derby and then went into the Eclipse as a leading contender and even money favourite to beat the older opposition of Adabe, who, of course, we all know, and Mishriff, who was last year's French Derby winner, who had experienced success in the Middle East, in Saudi Arabia, and also in the Shima Classic. So He's turned them over quite easily, using the weight for age scale to his advantage with the 5 kilos off there, and he just tapped them for a turn of foot. We know Abe is a bit of a grinder, but he gives his all, and St. Mark's Basilica just sat off them and reeled them in quite comfortably. He's a lovely horse. He was bred by Bob Scarborough, the former Moonee Valley Racing Club chairman, so I'm sure he would have got up in the early hours of the morning or stayed up, and he would have been delighted with what he saw.
Now, one via SMS for you, Carlos, and you might not have a hotline to the stable, but wondering if St. Mark's Basilica could be arc-bound.
Oh, potentially, but, you know, that there's probably a little bit of water to go under the bridge. I'd suggest, 2,000 metres at this stage. Maybe they might keep him back to in distance. Certainly his next target will be the Judmont International at York, which is over 2,060-odd metres. So that performance will maybe provide some clues. But, of course, they've got the stablemate in Love, who looks the dominant mile-and-a-half performer in England at the moment.
How did you see that race last night, Dean?
Yeah, he's a very impressive horse, Warren, even though it was a small field. And just looking at the current entries that he holds, I mean, I don't think I'm not sure if they've been taken, but he's certainly the Judmont and the Irish Champion Stakes loom, and all of his entries seem to be a mile up to a mile and a quarter. So, maybe that's where he lies. And as Carl said, that Love might be the one that heads towards the arc. But, he's a very smart horse, and, it was good to be able to line him up through Dave's performance as well.
Certain times, obviously, with COVID, Carl, and that's been a little bit done to death. But from your perspective, if horses, or are there any horses that you're aware of with your role at racing.com that are likely to target the spring carnival out here that you're looking forward to seeing?
Yeah, there's not too many, Warren. It's not going to be a traditional year. I know the connection to True Self are eager to come out again. But, of course, she's an eight-year-old mare, and it's subject to the vetting process, and she's been over jumped. So, it all comes down to the vetting process. Prince of Arran, he might come back again, but we've all heard the comments from Charlie Fellows, and we know his thoughts on the scintigraphy. In saying that, Prince of Arran's form has to improve, and his next run will be in the September Stakes, and that will largely dictate whether or not the horse makes the trip out again. There's probably every chance he doesn't. And then in terms of Godolphin, well, they might bring out one or two horses, but again, that all comes down to what Charlie Appleby and the team at Godolphin wish to do. They might look at Tamari, the feature race winner from Royal Ascot, and say, well, let's just put him away and gear him up for a Gold Cup next year, a Cup season, rather than following the footsteps of Cross Counter and target the Melbourne Cup. So I don't think there'll be a great deal of horses that come out. I'd imagine, you're looking at basically the Australian-owned horses and those connections that are eager to win a Melbourne Cup, say a person like Lloyd Williams, to bring out a team of horses. If you don't have that affiliation to Australia or a real burning desire to win the Melbourne Cup, it's unlikely we'll see horses come out.
Dean, in your role with Gerry Ryan as managing a role in his bloodstock, you're sourcing and trying to identify horses overseas to potentially come out for those feature races. Has this situation impacted your role there?
We're still looking at horses, Warren, but they're more that they come here, acclimatise, have a 12-month build-up, not to be sort of fresh off the plane and compete this year. So, it's certainly, and probably the stringent nature of vetting them going forward as well. Thought we've taken all precautions in the past, but you've got to be really diligent to probably even have a scintigraphy before you even want to purchase them.
Sunshine Coast Racing yesterday postponed to following Sunday, the 11th of July, and new nominations taken for them. So bets there would have been refunded and new fields to be identified for the feature races at the Sunshine Coast, the Caloundra Cup, and the Glasshouse Tour of the features there. Racing yesterday, therefore, featured for us at Flemington with some international component there with the Coral Eclipse from Sandown in the UK. Now it's time to get the boys' runs of the day and horses to follow.
Let's wrap up the Correct Weight Racing Review with the run of the day and the horses to follow.
Dino, we'll start with you.
I'll go with Grand Promenade as the run of the day, Warren, and the appropriately named Double Chance I'll be giving a double chance to. I think she could bounce back, especially if she goes up in trip at her next run.
Terrific work, Dino. And I know you love your jumps racing. There's also synthetic racing at Pakenham today. Is there anything you're keeping an eye on this afternoon?
I'll be watching the jumps racing very closely, Warren, because there's some really good horses going around, none more so than the very exciting Flying Agent. Looking forward to seeing him in the Thackeray Steeple, but they're all very short. But maybe the best bet at Pakenham will go with race 4, number 2, Manhattan Sting.
Terrific work right throughout the day, Dino. Look forward to hearing your contribution on RSN 927 right throughout the week.
My pleasure. Thanks, Warren.
Dean Lester there. And Carl DiOrio, before I get your run of the day and horse to follow, quite often you put out some quirky facts, like this has been the quickest 1,200-metre race at Sandown since 1927 or something. Was there anything over the weekend in your raving Saturday night that you identified as a quirky stat?
Well, I suppose the pedigree was the winner there for its dance and having Palmy on the same day. That wasn't too good. But I suppose the linkage with Ben Mellum and Gary Portelli, they're again combining for a two-year-old race. Ben Mellum and Gary Portelli, they've combined to win six races since 2007 and on five occasions with two-year-olds. Of course, She Will Reign was their dominant horse together, the 2017 Golden Slipper winner. So that's probably as quirky as it gets from me this week, Warren. I probably have let myself down on this occasion.
Well, that's quirky in itself. What about that run of the day and a horse to follow?
Run of the day, obviously, Grand Promenade for the obvious reasons. And a horse to follow, Bon Vivant. I just can't wait to see him back at Flemington. Hopefully he goes to that fiery handicap over 1,800 metres and gets a little bit more luck and racing room. And I think he'd be awfully hard to beat the son of Golden Horn.
Great work, Carl. Great to have you part of the team this morning.
Likewise. Good to be with you, Warren.
I'll go with Grand Promenade also as the run of the day, closely followed by Lindout. I thought they were two of the standout performances at Flemington yesterday. And I thought Actil Ghali might go to the Byly and be hard to beat. I thought he ran well for the Rob Hickmock stable. I'll make him my horse to follow.